4 minutes after 8 o'clock. Welcome to the Morning Magazine for Friday, June 10th, 2022. I'm your host, Alexis Kenyon. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up after the headlines, we will hear about a protest in Boulder that led to the birth of CU Boulder's Ethnic Studies Department. Then we get an update on sports news from across the Front Range. Finally, we have our regular Friday segment, .org, spotlighting the work of a local nonprofit. At 8:30, Connections comes your way. Kathy Partridge will host two teachers who have written a children's book. Then at 9:30, we will bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music with a morning sound alternative. That's all ahead, but first, these local and regional headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
Governor Jared Polis signed two crime-related bills into law Wednesday. House Bill 1300 aims to crack down on human trafficking done through illicit massage parlors by giving counties the power to require special business licenses for massage operations. The bill will require owners to pass criminal background checks along with other conditions. According to Senator Bob Gardner of Colorado Springs, many large municipalities already require special business licenses for massage parlors, which have prompted illicit operations to move to unincorporated portions of counties. The other crime-related bill signed by the governor this week is Senate Bill 150, which creates a new Office of Liaison for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives. The office will help lead and review investigations into missing Indigenous people and provide criminal justice support for families. The new law also requires data collection, the publication of a database on missing Indigenous people, and an emergency alert system to notify tribes and media outlets when there is a missing or murdered Indigenous person. Statistics compiled by the Denver Gazette indicate more than 4 out of 5 Indigenous people in the United States have experienced violent crime, with Indigenous women nearly 3 times more likely to be murdered than white women. The Urban Health Institute ranks Denver 7th in the United States for the most missing and murdered Indigenous women not included in law enforcement databases. Governor Polis also signed into law Wednesday a bill that will add domestic workers to the state's employment discrimination protections. The Colorado Anti-Discrimination Act, which covers disability, race, sex, sexual orientation, religion, age, and nationality, will expand in August to include employees who work for private households, such as cleaners, gardeners, nannies, or elderly care workers. The new bill also extends the time for an employee to file a claim with the Civil Rights Commission. State officials estimate the new legislation will increase discrimination complaints by about 200 each year. According to the Colorado Women's Bar Association, lawmakers historically intended to exclude domestic workers from employment protections as the industry employed recently emancipated enslaved people at the beginning of the Jim Crow era. The Mile High United Way 211 Help Center, a subcontractor for Lutheran Family Services, will begin making outreach calls today to households affected by the December 30th Marshall Fire. The Boulder County Commission approved a contract in May with Lutheran Family Services to administer the Recovery Navigation Program, which aims to assist affected residents through one-on-one counseling. The Boulder County Wildfire Fund, a donation fund administered by the Community Foundation of Boulder County, paid a majority of the $1.4 million contract with Lutheran Family Services, with the rest provided by the county. Mile High United Way will start reaching out to households that registered at the Disaster Assistance Center. According to the county's press release, the program's recovery navigators will be available in person and virtually to provide long-term recovery assistance, including recovery plans, financial support, and referrals. State wildlife officers rescued the orphan 3-day-old moose calf on Wednesday evening, whose mother, a sheriff deputy, killed earlier in the day after attacking 2 people and a dog encountered on a trail near Netherland. A Boulder County sheriff deputy shot the mother early Wednesday morning after repeated attempts to attack again as the injured party was being rescued. Wildlife officials retrieved the calf at a site near the West Magnolia Trailhead after an extensive search and multiple sightings. Colorado Parks and Wildlife officials say the probability of the calf's survival is unknown, as they do not know how much of an early intake of vital nutrients and antibodies the calf received from her mother. Colorado Parks and Wildlife said in its press release that although staff cannot take in every orphaned animal, they determined when evaluating the circumstances of the situation, they would take in the calf to use her growth and development for the agency's educational purposes. The St. Vrain School District and the district's teacher union came to an agreement earlier in the week over teacher pay and benefits for the upcoming school year. The Longmont Leader reports the parties agreed to an increase of $4,000, or just over $49,000, for a base salary for an entry-level teacher. The district superintendent estimates the average raise administered to all teachers, classified staff, and administrators will be close to 8%. According to the Longmont Leader, the district and union will also reopen discussions on additional compensation for the upcoming school year if the district's tax collections from the mill levy override exceed $56 million. The district's assistant superintendent for human resources told the Longmont Leader the additional compensation could help the district hit the $50,000 mark for starting teacher salaries. Today's weather includes sunny skies with highs reaching 93 degrees for Denver and Boulder and 94 for Fort Collins. Winds could gust as high as 16 to 25 miles per hour. Tonight, skies will be mostly clear with lows in the 60s. The current temperature in Boulder is 61 degrees. For KJNU, I'm Stacey Johnson.
An exhibit at the Boulder Museum of Contemporary Art features the work of Mateo Vela, a CU student who has focused his honors thesis on the 1990s student movement that led to the creation of the school's ethnic studies department. KGNU's Rosanna Longo-Better spoke with Vela about the social and racial justice issues that remain in Boulder.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you, Rosanna. It's great to be here and thank you to KGNU. Yeah, so really my inspiration for doing my honors thesis on that particular movement was really based on my own experiences as a student organizer when I was in college. So I recently just graduated from CU this past May. And while I was an undergrad, I had actually been a part of Umasi Mecha, which is a student organization on campus that works a lot on Latinx activism and different social issues pertaining to the Latinx community. And I just, you know, was really curious to learn how these other activists had been successful in creating systemic change. You know, their efforts led to the establishment of the Ethnic Studies Department at CU Boulder that we have today, which is a very esteemed department, does really amazing research, and one of the only departments that has a PhD program for ethnic studies in the country, actually. So I was just, you know, really approaching it from my own personal lens as a community organizer, really interested to see how it was that these protesters in the 90s were able to make such an impactful change that has impacted my education, you know, as an ethnic studies major myself, but also a lot of my close friends who are also activists.
You and Umasi Mecha have organized an event and a panel discussion on the student protest. It's coming Friday, June 10th at BMOCA, and it's a free event. Why did you decide to organize this event? And please share some details about the event and the importance of the discussion that you will be facilitating and who will be participating. It seems like it's a big, big event.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm really excited because just to give you know, a little bit of the layout of the event, then I could talk about the significance. So the event itself is going to be split into two main sort of parts. First, there's going to be an exhibit that I had curated myself, along with a couple of other Umasi Mecha members, that really just explores like a lot of the research that I did on the 1994 ethnic studies protests, but through the sources that I was actually looking at when I was doing the research. So really trying to bring those sources to life. So it's really inviting the audience to re-examine this historical event themselves. So we're going to have a lot of newspaper clippings, a lot of images of the protests from the time as they were taking place, so that people can really get a feel for what the issues were that, you know, students of color and their allies were really protesting for at the time. So that's kind of the first part of the event. The second part of the event is there's going to be a community panel. So I was really, you know, honored to get in touch with, you know, a lot of the activists that did participate in this movement in the 90s. So we have four activists from that time who are going to be coming and speaking about their experience during the protests. So that includes Carlos Kareem Windom, Marta Lochamin, who's the Boulder County Commissioner. And then it also includes Tim Russo, who works at KGNU as well. And then we also have Monica Perez, who currently works in education down in Denver. So we have a really good lineup, and really, you know, the significance of it, of this event, really is just to bring awareness to an event that is very important, not just the legacy of CU Boulder in terms of, you know, Black, Indigenous, people of color having student movements, but really on a national scale. This was a multiracial, you know, coalition movement to get an ethnic studies department where, you know, there were all sorts of students from different backgrounds participating in this. You know, it's really just to draw attention to this movement that I really feel has gone overlooked.
What do you see as the legacy of that 90s student protest, and how does that manifest itself today for students at CU and students that are participating in UMAS y Mecha?
Oh, yeah, very big question. Just from my own research and from getting to curate this event, I think what I would say the significance of the 1994 protests are to me and my own organizing would be that, you know, the 94 protests really gave us sort of a model and really a historical example of when people from different backgrounds, different racial backgrounds, were really able to come together and make really substantial systemic change in a very short amount of time, which is something that I think a lot of, you know, movements today are trying to do, right? Whether that's the Black Lives Matter movement or, you know, movements for undocumented folks. Like, there are all sorts of different movements right now that are really trying to push past a lot of gridlock, you know, a lot of, you know, people in power who may not want these really big changes to happen, right? So I think that this movement really gives us a relational sort of perspective on how we can sort of work together to actually make really big changes happen. And then on top of that, you know, what it means for UMAS y Mecha specifically, I think, is really just kind of, you know, stitching together more of the history of our student organization, because we have a very rich history on the campus. And UMAS y Mecha did also play a really big role in these protests as well, which I think the exhibit will make very clear. And in particular, you know, UMAS y Mecha was really concerned at the time with the alleged racial discrimination of a Chicano professor in the sociology department. And that was really what spurred their activism at the time. And, you know, later on, they were able to, you know, form coalitions with other organizations for the ethnic studies department specifically. So I think for the organization, it also has a really, you know, specific historical significance of really starting to, you know, bridge together, well, what has happened, you know, since the 70s? What was activism looking like after Los Seis, after these different, you know, bombings and things that happened in the 70s? So, yeah, that's what I would say.
Mateo, if you can also, just for our listeners to remember what Los Seis de Boulder are, I think it is important, because when I was going out there and before COVID, I was able to interview you and follow you, because there was a huge movement at that time in school because of the Seis de Boulder. So if you can just make a reference about that, because it's good to bring it, to highlight it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so Los Seis de Boulder essentially were six activists back in 1974. Who were killed in two separate car bombings in Boulder. And unfortunately, you know, their deaths were never solved by law enforcement or anything. But what we do know about their lives is that they were very active in the Chicano movement specifically, and at the CU Boulder campus. Each of los seis had, you know, a tie to CU Boulder in being students, being graduate students, et cetera. So it's, you know, that's they're basically like icons for the movement. And a lot of people really consider them, you know, symbols of resistance for the Chicanx educational movement. And that's really what their significance is.
In particularly around social and racial justice. And this push for certain sectors to ban the teaching of critical race theory and historical injustices. It's huge. So if you can make a reference about this issue, because it's so pertinent, like many people, they don't know about the Seis de Boulder.
Yeah, that's a really great point. And I think, you know, really points to why, you know, re-examining the 1994 ethnic studies protest is such an important legacy right now, you know, to re-examine. But I think especially today, but really throughout history, there has always been, I would say, from, you know, different educational systems, people in power, sort of this, I guess, this trepidation to really examine race and examine class and these different social identities in a critical way. And, you know, some of the pushback that people really received in the 94 protests, at least from what I had seen in the media, and I think what will become apparent from the exhibit as well, people have felt, you know, even in the past that, oh, we're not ready to talk about race in that way, especially in the 90s. Like that was really kind of a really predominant sort of theme of like, oh, like, you know, we don't talk about race. Like, why are we talking about it in these explicit sort of ways, right? And I think we still see that sort of discourse today. It just takes on kind of a different light, right? Depending on who you're talking to. And now, you know, we're seeing these sort of outright attacks on these programs that were developed, you know, throughout the 60s, 70s, and onwards, you know, into the 90s. And, you know, I think it really just points to the fact that, you know, there were previous generations of activists that fought for us to have these programs and these curriculums, but it's also very necessary to keep those histories alive and to continue to engage with those histories so that they can't be erased. So I think in particular for students and for people who are hoping to be allies to students as they are continuing to push for social change on CU Boulder's campus specifically, it's really important to attend this panel so that they can have some of that firsthand knowledge of activists who have pushed for that change and, you know, kind of what their wisdom and words of advice is for people who are continuing to push for change today.
Mateo Manuel Vela, telling us about this important panel discussion happening at B Mocha this Friday, June 10th from 5 to 7:30, an event that is highlighting the importance of social justice movements. For KGNU, I am Rosana Longo-Better.
You're listening to the Morning Magazine on KGNU. Up next, it's Sports Talk with KGNU's Jimmy Searfoss.
Sports? Who's talking sports? I'm talking sports. Who? Me. Did someone say they're talking sports? Hello and welcome back to this week's rendition of Sports Talk with Jimmy. I am your host, Jimmy Searfoss, and the Colorado professional sports world has been on fire lately. But I wanted to start off with something a little bit more local, and it's a good cause. The Boulder B, the letter, not the word, Strong Ride Cycling event currently is taking fundraising for the race. The race takes money and puts it towards local cancer charities. In the past, they have raised up to $3.5 million from its 750,000 competitors since its inception in 2011. The event has four different courses, each varying in length. The longest course is a 68-mile-long trek through the mountains. The shortest track is just a mile long, but that one's just for the kids. The race takes place August 13th, and again, that is Boulder B Strong Ride. $4.65 billion. That is the number a group led by Rob Walton spent to purchase the Denver Broncos. It is the most a sports franchise has ever been bought for. Walton is the heir to the Walmart fortune. The deal still has some hoops to jump through. They must get at least 24 votes of yes from other NFL teams for the deal to go through, but that is expected to pass without any issues. With this, the Broncos will have a new owner, a new head coach, and a new quarterback. This is not the same Broncos from a year ago. They have finally done it. For the first time since they've won it back in 2001, the Colorado Avalanche will be playing in the Stanley Cup Final. With their overtime win on Monday, they punched their ticket to the final after sweeping the Edmonton Oilers. Now they're going to have to wait, as their opponents are still being determined. The New York Rangers and Tampa Bay Lightning are still currently playing in their series. The winner will be playing the Avalanche in the finals. And did you want to go to the game? Well, you better be ready to shell out a few Benjamins, because the demand for the tickets are insane. Some resale tickets have gone up past $10,000. My seat will be worth nothing in about 10 feet from the TV. It is a great time to be in the Colorado sports world right now. But, unfortunately, I am out of time for this week's segment, but you can catch me at this same time next week. You are listening to Sports Talk with Jimmy. I've been your host, Jimmy Searfoss, with KGNU.
Welcome to .org, KGNU's weekly look at local nonprofits.
Hello, my name's Jonas, and I'm here today with Wendy Merchant, the founder and executive director of STEM Blazers.
So STEM Blazers was founded 8 years ago. As a mechanical engineer and a woman in STEM myself, I had hit the pause button to take care of my kiddo, who was 10 at the time, and started exploring different STEM opportunities for him, like robotics and coding and things like that. And as I was exploring those for him, I realized that there were still very few girls, if any, engaging in these types of after-school activities. And I kind of was shocked, because after being in the industry for 20 years, I'm like, what's the disconnect with these programs that still don't have girls? And where I came from, it looks exactly the same. What's happened? So I did some research and realized that in engineering specifically, which was near and dear to my heart, it had pretty much flattened for the last 30 years. It had gone up and down, but the number of women had kind of like flatlined. The number of women in software engineering and computer science had dropped since the 90s. And I thought, oh my gosh, like, how is this possible? Like, if I can be an engineer, all of these young ladies can be engineers, and I've got to figure a way to make that happen and to use my voice and try to encourage the next generation to consider a career in STEM, because we need their voice. We need their creativity, their innovation. So something inside of me just kind of like ignited, and I found my calling where it's like, I have to do this. At STEM Blazers, we work with middle school and high school students, typically a semester through a school year, where we introduce them to women in the community in industries that they wouldn't necessarily see women in or know that they could participate in. So it's all about showing them what's possible, attainable, getting them inspired, and then really helping them connect the dots with what they're interested in and what career pathways are available. We're very excited to be able to say that at the end of this school year, I believe we've served over 1,000 girls. Our whole goal is to bring it full circle. So those that we have helped, you know, elevate into their careers and into their STEM interests, give back to the current middle school and high school girls. So we're seeing a great impact with these girls actually choosing and persisting in STEM and then wanting to give back. If, you know, someone's looking to get involved, we are always looking for volunteers. We have a different variety of engagement opportunities, from being guest speakers, event support, just operation support in general. There's generally a fit for someone to get involved in some way. We do have a variety of different opportunities. Individuals interested in getting engaged would go to www.stemblazers.org. And you can also find us on, we have a page on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
You've been listening to .org, KGNU's weekly look at local nonprofits. For more .orgs or for more information on this episode, visit news.kgnu.org. That's all the time we have today for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Alexis Kenyon. Special thanks to Stacey Johnson, James Swenson, Kiara Damari, Rosanna Longobetter, Jimmy Searfoss, and Chris Schultz for all of their help. Stay tuned for Connections just after this news update from the BBC.